You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the My Senior Horse Podcast. This is for people who own, manage, and love senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules, can come to share our passion and to learn more about caring for our senior equids. I'm your host, Kim Brown, Editorial Director of My Senior Horse. Today, we're going to talk to Dr. Eleanor Gurgis on the topic of positive reinforcement in equids. We launched the Global My Senior Horse brand in partnership with Linda Mars and Mars Horse Care in mid-2024. We offer many ways to get information on older equids, including this bi-weekly podcast, articles on the MySeniorHorse.com website, videos, and much more. Our guest, Dr. Gurgis, is the Ella McGregor Resident in Equine Behavioral Medicine, Dick Vet Equine Hospital, University of Edinburgh. Dr. Gurgis graduated from University of Edinburgh in 2021. She then completed a combined hospital and ambulatory internship at Cambridge Equine Hospital, while taking her first job in equine charity practice at Red Wings Horse Sanctuary in Norfolk. Dr. Gurgis then worked at Bransbury Horses, another charity in Lincoln, before starting a residency at the University of Edinburgh, where she is training toward becoming a specialist in equine behavioral medicine. Dr. Gurgis' particular area of interest are the relationship between pain and behavior, the provision of low-stress veterinary care, and human behavior change for animal welfare. She also has a strong interest in research, with her first study focusing on UK horse owners' understanding of learning theory and how this relates to the perception of and response to problem behavior. This is an ongoing project focused on exploring the complex link between pain and behavior. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Gurgis.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let's just start by answering the question, what is positive reinforcement when you're dealing with horses or ponies or donkeys or mules?
Yeah, so positive reinforcement is a component of learning theory. Learning theory is a huge topic, and it just describes the principles of how any animal learns, and that includes dogs, cats, horses, and people. So it's ongoing all of the time. And there's lots of different levels of complexity to learning theory. So we can break it down into, to begin with, non-associative learning, and then the next level of complexity is associative learning. So when it comes to positive reinforcement, that relates to associative learning. So that's what we'll focus on. Associative learning can then be further categorized into classical conditioning and operant conditioning. And I'll talk about both of those because they're both relevant to how we use positive reinforcement in real life day-to-day scenarios with horses. So I'll start by talking about classical conditioning. So classical conditioning is all about how one thing predicts another. I don't know if any of our listeners will have heard of Pavlov's dogs. So Pavlov was a scientist and he had a lot of dogs that he used for his research projects. He was focused on neuroscience, and he, with these dogs, every single day, they'd obviously need feeding. So their routine was a little bell rang and then the dogs would be fed. And he noticed that, of course, when the food arrived, these dogs started wagging their tails, coming to the front of their pen and looking excited. And that was their natural emotional and physiological response to the food arriving. Over a number of repetitions, he noticed that even when the bell rang, the dogs eventually started coming to the front of the kennel, wagging their tails, salivating and looking excited. And that's because that bell had been classically conditioned to predict the arrival of food. So as I said at the beginning, it's about how one thing predicts another. So an example that we might have come across with our horses is how horses will respond when they see their owner entering the feed room. So the first time your horse sees you entering that feed room, that is a completely neutral stimulus for them. But it's through repetitions that they learn, oh, when my owner walks into that feed room, that means that I'm going to get food. So that has been classically conditioned, the visual stimulus of the owner entering the feed room has been classically conditioned to predict that soon they're going to have a yummy bucket of food in front of them. So that's classical conditioning. So as I said before, we also have operant conditioning. Operant conditioning is all about how our behaviors can be used to modulate outcomes. So Operant conditioning can be divided into four different quadrants. We have positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, and negative punishment. So first, let's think about the difference between reinforcement and punishment. So reinforcement is when we are making a behavior more likely to recur in the future, whereas punishment is when we're making a behavior less likely to occur in the future. And if we think about the positive and the negative, it's about whether we're adding something or taking something away. So it can get a little bit confusing, so we'll go through them one by one. So positive reinforcement is when we add something pleasant, something appetitive, to make a behavior more likely to recur in the future. So it's usually a behavior that we want to see more of. For example, if you're riding your horse, it's done a really nice movement under saddle, you might give them a scratch, you might say, good girl, good boy, you might give them a wee treat or something. And so we're reinforcing that behavior because we want to see more of it. So we can also use negative reinforcement. Negative reinforcement is when we remove something unpleasant or aversive to make a behavior more likely to recur in the future. So an example of that might be if you're riding your horse and you're training them to yield their hindquarters. You might apply some leg pressure to their side, and you'll keep that leg pressure there. And when they offer a step by yielding their hindquarters, which is the desired behavior, you remove that pressure. So the horse learns next time you apply that pressure, that stimulus, they learn, oh, if I move my hindquarters, the pressure disappears. And so you're negatively reinforcing that behavior, and through repetitions, and they'll offer it more readily and you can put it on a cue. So that's reinforcement. I won't spend too much time talking about punishment, actually, because we know for welfare reasons and for ethical reasons, it's got lots of negative consequences. So for welfare reasons, often it can induce fear and stress. That's counterintuitive to learning as well. And often it's not a very constructive method of training. It tells the animal what we don't want them to do, but it doesn't teach the animal what we want them to do instead. So really, we want to be enforcing desirable behaviors rather than punishing unwanted behaviors. So that describes the different quadrants of operant conditioning. And obviously today we're going to be focusing on positive reinforcement. So there are lots of different ways that we can use that in our day to day. One method that we absolutely love using, clicker training. So clicker training actually uses classical conditioning and operant conditioning. So clicker training uses a click and or a marker word or any sort of stimulus that really stands out to the horse. And we classically condition that click usually or that marker word to predict that food is going to arrive. So we do that through a number of repetitions. We might click, give them a treat, click, give them a treat, click, give them a treat. And yeah, over a number of repetitions, they learn, oh, when I hear a click, that means food's coming. And then because the click is a really standout moment in time, we can use that to really get precise timing with what we're training. So when it comes to use of positive reinforcement, say our horse does a behavior that we really like, we can click when they do that behavior, exactly when they do that behavior, and then we deliver the food afterwards. And that is really powerful because in real life, when you're trying to positively reinforce an animal, that involves them doing the behavior, then you have to reach into your pocket, get a treat, and then deliver it. And that might span a couple of seconds. And during those seconds, that horse might have shifted its weight, lifted a foot, looked to the left-hand side. What behavior are you reinforcing when that food is actually delivered to them? But if you trained them that the click is the important part of that sequence, it's when I was whatever behavior I was doing when that clicker was sounded, that is the desirable behavior. It can elevate your training because you've got a really clear line of communication there. So yeah, the clicker is an important part of how we can use positive reinforcement training in real life. And there's lots of applications of that we can discuss.
Great. Thank you for that. Those basics, because I get those confused occasionally, and I'm sure a lot of horse owners do.
Yeah, it can be very confusing. And we're using learning theory all of the time, whether we realize it or not. So the more we understand that, the more powerful it can be. I think it's really worth getting your head around. And hopefully that's been helpful.
Mars Equestrian, a sponsorship division of Mars Incorporated, is dedicated to highlighting the Mars brands, such as Buckeye Nutrition, Spillers, Antech Diagnostics, Sound Imaging, Royal Canin, Pedigree, Nutro, and many more in the equestrian world. Whether it's through nutrition, veterinary care, or education, our purpose is to create a better world for horses, pets, and the people who love them.
So let's talk a little bit about positive reinforcement. How do you use it when you're dealing? You mentioned a couple of things, but give us some positive reinforcement, you know, in everyday situations.
Mm-hmm. So I am an equine vet. So of course, I have a bit of a bias. One of the really important applications of clicker training can be the provision of low stress husbandry and veterinary care. And so for me as a vet, quite often that will involve doing injections. And for your average horse owner, that might involve things like picking up feet or applying creams or fly spray. So often we have to do things to our animals every single day for their welfare that they might find a little bit scary at first. They might find a little bit unpleasant, but we can use positive reinforcement and clicker training to make them be active participants in the process and to change their perception where it's actually an enjoyable process. So I can use injection training as an example, if that's okay, because I think it's quite relevant, especially to senior horses who are going to possibly need a higher level of veterinary care as they get a bit older and, you know, things like arthritis, dental issues, blood tests. So I think it's a really relevant one. So we'll actually be using combined reinforcement in this instance. So combined reinforcement is when you use both positive and negative reinforcement at the same time. So say for an example, the horse doesn't like injections. So when you stroke its neck, it perceives that as aversive. So the hand on the neck is a little bit scary and unpleasant. So in this instance, that's the aversive stimulus. And we can use food, which is a primary reinforcer. We all need food. That can be our positive reinforcer. So we can use combined reinforcement to train desirable behavioral responses while we're doing procedures on them, in this instance, an injection. So what we end up doing is breaking it down into lots of small steps that the horse can cope with. If we straight away go up to a horse who's a little bit nervous of injections and go straight for the vein, that's going to be a little bit scary for them. So we usually start somewhere that they're comfortable. So that might just be a stroke on the neck, and that's what they can cope with. So we stroke their neck, and what's the behavioral response that we see? Hopefully they'll be standing quietly and calmly, and that's the desirable behavior that we want to reinforce. So we'll reinforce that by removing our hand, the aversive stimulus, and that's negative reinforcement. And we'll also reinforce the behavior by delivering some food, because that's the appetitive stimulus and that's the positive reinforcement. So we can do that over a couple of repetitions, and then we can build up to the next step. That might be moving our hand a little bit closer to the vein, or it might be us bringing a second hand in. And again, hopefully our horse is performing desirable behavioral responses, and importantly, desirable emotional responses. It's really about how they feel. So we want a horse that is calm. So we need to be reading their body language the whole time. And if we're getting those desirable responses, again, we'll continue to positively and negatively reinforce that. And we build up bit by bit in successive approximations towards our end goal. So step by step. And that process is desensitization as well. And it's also counter conditioning. So sort of relating to Pavlov's dogs. Now, when we touch the neck, that predicts something good happening. And that's really powerful. So that's an example of how we can use it for injections. Again, I do have a bit of a veterinary bias, but the same could be applied to lifting up feet to pick out hooves. You might start by stroking a horse's leg, and hopefully they'll stand calmly and quietly. And you can reinforce that by removing your hand, the aversive stimulus potentially, and reinforce it positively by giving a treat. And build your way up until you can lift up that leg. The same applies to fly spray. Hopefully you'll be seeing the pattern here. It's all about breaking it into small steps that the animal can cope with and changing their emotional response by using food, positive reinforcement. You can change their behavioral responses and their emotional responses through the use of operant conditioning, and particularly in this instance, positive and negative reinforcement, and through classical conditioning, where oh, now when someone brings the fly spray or touches my leg, that actually predicts something nice.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and I love the fact you talked about some of the veterinary things. My veterinarian, I adopted a donkey a long time ago, a rescue. And I know you've got some experience with that. And my veterinarian, she was only, the donkey was only, you know, 6-8 months old. And the veterinarian said, look, if you want this donkey to be happy the rest of its life, you need to teach it to get along with veterinarians and farriers, because they can be a little opinionated about these kind of things. So she helped me and we learned. So let's talk about positive reinforcement. How does it work with different breeds or even species, like with the asses?
Yeah, absolutely. So the principles of learning theory are the same no matter what species or breed you are applying that to. But of course, we have to adapt to the animal in front of us. We have to adapt to our learners. So some things that we need to consider are the individual temperament and their previous learning experience and how that's going to change the emotional state of the animal during that training session. So, for example, if you've got an animal that's naturally more anxious, we're probably going to have to go at a slightly slower rate than an animal who's naturally inquisitive and bold. And equally, if you've got an animal in front of you who's had a lot of negative experiences, whether it's context specific to, say, for example, veterinary care, or if they've had a lot of negative experiences with having their legs handled, then you've got a whole learning history that you need to try and change. And so that might take you a little bit longer. And of course, you might have that animal's history, but you might not. And so the most important thing is always to look at the animal in front of you and to respond accordingly. So we need to assess their body language, their behavior, and the progress of your training. We could probably spend hours talking about all of those different topics, but I think the basic things to think about are when it comes to body language, for example, we want a horse, usually horse or donkey or mule, who is relaxed. We want no muscular tension. We want a low head carriage. We don't want an animal who's constantly scanning the horizon for potential threats. Think of that facial expression, you know, when they get that little crinkle in their eyes, much like we do when we're stressed, or flared nostrils, things like that. So it's really important that you're paying attention to that. When it comes to the behaviors that we're seeing, a really simple question to ask ourselves is, does the animal want to interact? Is it choosing to participate in this training? Hopefully, yes, because that means that we're going at a rate that they can cope with and that they're in a positive emotional state. If our animal isn't choosing to engage, then that's a sign that we need to change what we're doing. And then think about the progress of your training as well. Are you making progress in the right direction? Are you getting more desirable behaviors? Are we reinforcing what we want to reinforce? If we find that we're not progressing with our training in the way that we want to, then again, that's a sign that we need to do things differently. So I have some tips about how we can respond if we're seeing some of those signs of stress or our training isn't progressing as we wish. So I think it's really important, as I said before, to break things down into little steps. So if you think that your animal's not coping, how can you break that down even further? With the example of the injection training, for example, if I stroke a horse's neck and they're finding that too much, maybe I need to start at their withers because that's where they're comfortable. Same with the fly spray. If I'm spraying that sprayer and they're anxious about that, maybe that's too much. Maybe I need to take a step back and just lift it up. And that's something that they can cope with, and then build it up from there. So it can really amaze you how small you can break those steps down when it comes to desensitizing an animal to something. And the same applies if you're trying to just do training for fun, if you're just doing some tricks, because that is really fun. Again, you just need to break it down into lots of little steps. Breaks are really important. We actually have research to show that animals learn more effectively when the training sessions are shorter and there are breaks in between. I think it's much like us. I know that if I've learned something new, then I step away, have a break, process it, and then come back. that really often will help me consolidate what I've learned, and then I can learn better and more efficiently thereafter. I also think if you are training a behavior with your animal and it's, you know, you're not having a desirable, calm emotional state and you're not getting the desirable behaviors that you're trying to train, we have to think about other factors. Is there more going on? What is this horse's lifestyle? Is it happy from the day to day? And something that I do want to flag is the potential for underlying pain, especially relevant, I think, for our older horses. If we've started a behavioral modification program, or if you're just trying to do your fun trick training, which I think is fantastic, but you're not getting the behaviors that you want or the emotions that you want, is there another factor? And is there a potential for underlying pain? That's a really big red flag for us. So that's particularly relevant for me as an equine vet who is in the field of equine behavioral medicine. If we are not getting the response that we want, we are always looking back and thinking, could there be underlying pain here? Of course, you need to think, is my training being implemented appropriately? But if it is, then there's probably something else going on. So if you do find yourself in that scenario where you're not making progress, I would be maybe calling your vets out and having a little MOT and seeing whether that could be a factor. And that's really important, not just for your training, but of course, for the welfare of the animal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And when you were talking about doing the trick training and, you know, giving horses some fun things to do to get rewarded for, my daughter and I do a lot of obstacle just because it kind of switches the horse to something different, gives them a new challenge, and they seem to really enjoy it. And one of our young horses, my grandson, was down in the field, and he and a buddy had built a tent out of an old tarp and so forth. And I went down to, you know, tell him it was time to come in for dinner. And the horses followed me down because it was time for their dinner too. And they're like, why are we going down in the field? Let's go down in the field. And the horses get up, and of course the kids and the tarp and everything. And some of the horses are going, I don't know, let's look at this. And then one of the young horses that had gone through this desensitization, you could see it in her face. She went, I get this. And she went over and walked on the tarp because that was one of the things we do. And she stood there just so proud of herself. So of course, the kids were like, oh, we want her off. And I'm like, no, you cannot negative anything. I went up, good girl, what a smart pony. And, you know, so it was recognizing as humans, recognizing she wasn't being mean. She was going, I know what I'm supposed to do with a tarp. I'm supposed to walk on it.
Yeah. So I think that's a really fantastic point. So thank you for bringing that up. I think horses can really, really enjoy the use of positive reinforcement training. I also do loads of clicker training with my own pony. She's actually non-ridden. She's not quite over 15, and that's her main job in life, and she loves it. Like you said, it's those light bulb moments. I think learning can be so fun. I know, for example, that with my horse, if I'm doing the same tricks I've always done, she enjoys it. But it's those light bulb moments that she gets really excited about. And for our senior horses that maybe aren't doing ridden work anymore, it's such a fantastic form of enrichment, whether it's because they're working for something that's motivating them, or like food, or if it's because they get those light bulb moments. And of course, we've talked a little bit about how we can use positive reinforcement for everyday care and activities, but why do we have horses? Usually because we want to enjoy them and we want them to be happy. And I think it's a really fantastic way of reconnecting with your horse and giving them choices, which is a really important part of being happy. It's a really important part of positive welfare, having choice and agency. So them choosing to engage in your training is really important. And then giving them different behaviors that they can offer in order to gain something that motivates them is fantastic. So yeah, I can't stress enough how it's such a fun and useful tool to have in your toolkit. So there's lots of resources online actually for those who are looking to try clicker training. When it comes to the provision of low stress veterinary care, I would encourage you to look at Don't Break Your Vet on YouTube. It's a resource produced by the British Equine Veterinary Association. It's a really fantastic resource for how you can use the principles of learning theory, including positive reinforcement, to promote a lower stress experience for everyone, the owner, the horse, and the vet. And when it comes to the use of positive reinforcement for fun, there are lots of Facebook groups that I'd encourage people to look at. For those who are interested in using clicker training to have fun with their donkey, mule, or equine. There are some really fantastic Facebook communities. Empowered Equestrians is a really great one that I'm also subscribed to. It's where horsey people can share their experiences while they're clicker training with their horses, donkeys, and mules. And it's a really nice community for troubleshooting and for sharing your progress and your wins and your challenges. So yeah, it's a nice one. I should say I'm in no way affiliated with them, but I think it's fantastic. So yeah, I'd encourage you to have a look. And also having that social support while you're trying something new with your horse is also really, really helpful, I think.
Well, do you have any other comments about positive reinforcement that you'd like to share? I know we've touched on a lot of things today, and we're going to have to beg you to come back because some of these things I'm so interested in, because, you know, that it's such a great way to interact with your horse through all of these different types of reinforcements and understand them so that the horse is having a less stressful or a happier time.
Yeah, it's a really big topic, and the topic has so many different branches, as you said. So yeah, I do think it would be useful to touch on how we use positive reinforcement, and doing so carefully. Every different type of training, no matter which quadrant of operant conditioning you're focusing on, has pros and cons and has to be used thoughtfully. As I said, it all comes back to looking at the animal in front of you and what is their current emotional state. We want it to be calm and we want it to be happy. But there is always the potential for negative emotions and unwanted behaviours to creep in there. So as a really powerful motivator, of course, our horses want access to that food. If we think about how horses have evolved, they're grazers. They are designed to be grazing for 16 hours of the day. And again, we have research that shows that horses don't really experience positive anticipation of food. It's not a pleasant emotional experience for them. They usually feel frustration. And we're now asking them to work for that. So things that we can do to ensure that our horses don't become frustrated. These include, again, breaking things down into small, easy steps. We also want to teach them some boundaries around food. And quite often, for the first time you ever, a horse will put their muzzle in the treat pouch and say, oh, I want the food and I want it now. And that's not naughty. That's just how they've been designed. Yeah. So we need to train them more desirable behaviours, which will then be reinforced, and that's how they can access the food. So whenever I'm clicker training with an animal, I will usually teach them to stand calmly, and that's how you get food. That's really simple. Standing there, standing still, and hopefully we'll get some signs of calmness. I think that's a really important first step, and missing that one out can be problematic. And because if you start, you know, trying to train them to touch a target or stand on a pedestal or whatever fun tricks you might want to pursue, again, if they don't have that calm baseline emotional state and good habits, good behavioral habits, it can end up getting quite messy. It can get quite high arousal. And for most of these behaviors that we're trying to train, we want low arousal. So quite often it will look like I'm stood with my horse, donkey, or mule next to me. And as I said, they quite often will start investigating the treat pouch, looking to see if they can get a snack. And I just wait. I wait for just a little bit of calmness. Again, breaking it down into little steps. They might not stand perfectly still looking away from me, but if they stop mugging the treat pouch for a second, I can click and reinforce that. And then hopefully they'll offer that a little bit more. Sometimes you just have to wait. And again, sometimes you can modulate the environment to try and set them up for success. If you're stood right next to them with the treat pouch right next to them, like so their muzzle is only 10 centimeters away from it, that's really challenging. But if you're stood at their shoulder with your treat pouch on the other side, again, that's just going to make it that much easier for them to perform the more desirable behavior, which is to stand calmly next to you. So yeah, over a number of repetitions, you'll find that the horse has, again, a little light bulb moment. It's quite amazing to observe where they go, oh, if I stand here and I put my head away from you, I get a treat. And that's actually, they tend to start offering that. And sometimes quite extremely, they'll look away. They'll say, oh, this is how I'm going to get my treat now. They'll be looking at you out of the corner of their eye and they'll say, okay, I'm looking away. Oh, good. There's my click and there's my treat. And of course, we always want calmness. So over time, you'll start clicking and treating when they're actually relaxing, being like, oh, I know how I get my treat. I just stand here calmly. We've actually given them a sense of control and we've made it predictable for them. And that's really powerful. They know what they have to do to get the treat. They're not constantly mugging. They're not searching your clothes and getting agitated. They know their job. And that's really fantastic. So yeah, that is a really important part of starting out with clicker training that I would strongly encourage people to put the time in before they progress much further than that. Again, we said take breaks. I think that's really important. And another point that I want to discuss is the type of food that we use. So it can be tempting when we say we're going to use treats for training to get your polos out or really yummy sugary mix. But that's like training children with sweeties. It's really exciting and it can be really hard for them to concentrate. And again, it can lend to them getting quite frustrated. So I would encourage you to use a low value treat. And it's amazing what horses will do for a little bit of chaff or chop, because it's still reinforcing. They still want it. Again, we all need food. It's reinforcing inherently, but it's not going to create a really high level of arousal, and it's not going to create conflict as well. And sometimes horses, because all animals really, because we want the treat, we'll put ourselves in scenarios that we're not really comfortable, but I really want the treat. But if you're using something that's lower value, it's a really honest question. You say, oh, you don't have to participate, you can go back to grazing, but there's some chaff here, and if you want to engage, please do. And yeah, I think it's a really nice way of giving them true choice. I always, again, try and ensure that there's another source of forage available to them so that I'm not the only way they can get food. As I said, horses are grazers and they can easily become frustrated when they don't have access to that food straight away. So whether it's a hay net tied in the corner or they can go off back to their pasture and choose to graze, I'd always, again, encourage there to be an alternative source. And again, that can really reduce frustration, because instead of them pushing themselves to participate when they're not actually feeling relaxed and calm, they have that choice. So yeah, those are a couple of different tips that I would recommend. I think they're all really useful and important things to bear in mind. But yeah, when it comes back to the whole reason we're here today, I just wanted to, again, emphasize what a useful and helpful and fun tool it can be. And I'd really encourage everyone to give it a go and check out some of those resources.
That sounds great. And again, we will make sure and include the resources from Dr. Burgess in the article that will go along with this on mysenior horse.com. So thank you so much for joining us today. I definitely would love to have you come back.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, and I'd be delighted to come back. There's lots more to talk about.
There is. To our audience, we encourage you to sign up for our weekly newsletter to be the first to get information from My Senior Horse. And if you have any comments or suggestions about senior horses, ponies, donkeys, or mules that you would like to have discussed either on this podcast or delved into for content on MySeniorHorse.com, send an email to me at kbrown, that's the letter K, Brown, at equinenetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Take care of yourselves and your senior equids.